And it is time for us to record again. Mr. Sean Mark Nipper.
Mr. Photo Joseph, how are you, sir?
I am very well. And yourself?
Never better. Never better. It was a great show you just had there. That was, for those that tuned in, what a treat.
What a treat. It was a bit mind-bending even for me to do. I'm just prepping for the show. I actually prepped for it over the weekend, and I had a bunch of notes, and I kind of went through it, you know, pseudo-rehearsed like a couple of times. And I think I actually pulled it off.
Well, you know that movie, Jerry Maguire, where she says, "You had me at hello."
Right.
Yeah, you lost me at spreadsheets. I'm like, what?
Yeah, it's definitely not your standard show. So for everybody listening who hasn't yet watched that YouTube show that I just did, obviously my channel is primarily about photography and video, and this one is sort of was, but it was more data analytics for Instagram, and it could be for anything. But the whole reason I did this was because I was researching hashtags, best use of hashtags. I found an interesting article on how to select your hashtags out of samples of hundreds and hundreds of them. I need to pick kind of my top 30, and I needed a way to analyze that data. And I found what I thought was a really interesting way to extract the data from Instagram.com, put it into a spreadsheet, parse it, sort it, filter it, and get the results that I needed out of it. And it was one of those rabbit hole things. We've talked about rabbit holes before. I'm notoriously bad at this. Like, I'll just go. I see a rabbit hole and I have to go down it.
Yeah, but squirrel.
I think the end results,
I don't follow that.
But the end results here were very good. I think it was really interesting. And even if you don't care about Instagram hashtags, that was only half of the story. The real meat of the story was the data parsing and how I went about finding that data. And it was, I think it was really interesting.
Well, why would I care for hashtags? And you actually helped me a couple of years ago and, you know, as far as putting hashtags in there, but why would someone want to care about hashtags?
Sure, sure. And I want to preface this by saying I am by no stretch of the imagination an Instagram expert. My Instagram follower count is crap and I don't get the engagement that I would like to get, but actually, I guess my engagement, given the follower count I have, is pretty good, but I'm not consistent enough. And so take everything I say with a grain of salt. But the idea behind hashtags is discovery. So let's take a really generic example like sunset. If I hashtag a picture with sunset and then you are on Instagram and you see a photo of a sunset and it has the hashtag sunset and you're feeling like, oh, I want to see more sunsets, and you tap on the hashtag sunset, you see all the photos, regardless of whether you're following that person or not, that were recently posted with sunset. Now, that's obviously a huge, very simple term, so it's going to have millions and millions of pictures, but they can get quite granular. And the cool thing about hashtags on Instagram is you can follow them. So just like you'd follow a person, you can follow a hashtag. So if you find that there's a hashtag that consistently has images that you like or about a topic you're interested or a place you want to visit, which is a great way to do it, places you might want to visit in the future, then you start following that and you start seeing pictures from that. So the whole idea of hashtagging it yourself is discovery. People will see it because they're clicking on the hashtag. People will see it because they are following that hashtag. And when they click on the hashtag, it takes you to a page that's kind of like an account page, and you see the hashtag at the top. You see how many images have been posted to that hashtag in all time. And it could be in the thousands, could be in the millions. And then there's a top nine. So that top nine grid is kind of the coveted, you want to get into that top nine. But part of what I learned before I did the show, and I explained in the show, and I referenced the website of where I got all this information, and obviously we'll link to the show in the notes below,
sure.
Was explaining how to have better odds of getting into that and following a ratio of posting tags, using tags that have a ratio of posts to them that is commensurate to how many likes you get on a photo. It's kind of a racial blend in there that is ideal for you to target.
So right.
Anyway,
right.
All that's in the show, but that's the idea behind hashtags is discovery. It's quite simply discovery.
Right. Right. Okay. So if I wanted someone to see my filmmaking work, I would want to make sure that my hashtags are along that line, but I would need to do some research to find where's my target audience. Right. And then I could go in and really decipher what, you know, who do I want to see this? Who do I want to connect with? And then makes myself more discovery. So, okay. Right.
You got it. You got it. And you can't just make up your own hashtags because nobody will find them. I mean, you can make up a hashtag and maybe you'll get lucky and it'll trend, which actually get this. So if you go on Instagram and you either type in or just find and tap on the link, the hashtag for Ashland, Oregon, which is where we both live, and you scroll all the way down to the very, very, very first post ever made from Ashland, Oregon, guess who posted it?
Me. It was
you, Sean. How did you know it was you? So I did it. I made the hashtag Ashland, Oregon, which is now a huge hashtag, and it's kind of cool. It's like, not like any credit. Nobody actually cares, but it's, you know, it's cool. I'm like, sure.
What year was that? That was 1970. When did you do that?
Eight. Yes, that's right. It was a while ago. It was a while ago.
We didn't even have, I don't think the hashtag actually was like only for the phone that you would actually dial. That's what the hashtag was for.
Well, that's the what the hashtag sign was called, pound.
Right,
hit the pound key. Can you imagine? I have yet to hear this, but it'll happen. You call into some, I don't know, like doctor's office or whatever. And, you know, to reach Dr. Smith, press pound 32. They're going to say, to reach Dr. Smith, press hashtag 32. It's going to happen. Because how many people today looking at a phone see the pound symbol? How many young people looking at that would know that was called a pound symbol?
Yeah, no, it's not a pound.
That's a hashtag.
They think that's two, when your fists, you know, come together as one. That's the pound.
That's the pound key. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Hysterical. Oh, God. Yeah, this, see, now we sound like a bunch of bitter old men.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Heck, we had to. You know, you start. I was actually explaining a payphone to my son, where you lift the receiver and you put your quarter in and you start dialing. And if you mess with the number up, you have to hang up, wait for your quarter to drop down, put the quarter back in, start over. And then you only had a certain amount of time that you could talk. So,
and your son looked at you and said, "What's a quarter?"
It's a quarter. Exactly. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Who needs those anymore?
Yep. Now we're definitely sounding like a bunch of old men. Anyway, totally. So that's what that post is about. So that story, that YouTube video, if you're interested in data analytics, refining data, searching data on the head, scrubbing on the web, scrubbing it, parsing it. It's, you know, like I said, I think it was kind of interesting. It was fun.
Yeah. So. And you can use that. Did you say you could use that for YouTube as well, trying to find audiences that way?
Well, no, somebody had asked that in the Q&A, whether they could do the same thing for YouTube. And I don't think so, because YouTube, you've got your keywords. You do. There are hashtags on YouTube, but it's very, very seldomly used. It's not really a thing there, where they do have keywords, but keywords could be anything and variations of anything. And they're invisible to the keywords that a person puts on their video are invisible to you unless you use a special tool to see them. So like TubeBuddy is the tool that I use, and that allows you to see what keywords other people are using, but it, more importantly, it analyzes all of YouTube and looks for most relevant keywords. So gotcha. That's kind of that type of data happening automatically for you as a service. So you're paying for the service, and it helps you to find those keywords.
Right. Okay. Cool. Well, very nice. Well, I did something this week. I took myself to a movie.
Oh, did you? What'd you go see?
I went to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, cool. I've heard it's good. How was it? What'd you think?
You know, it's interesting because it's his ninth film, and, you know,
which Quentin is his last film, knows, right?
No, 10. He's said he's going to do 10.
10. Okay.
Which I actually thought it was 9 too, but I've been corrected. But so this movie is 2 hours, 40 minutes long, and it, you know, it's a masterpiece in filmmaking. There's some people that have been let down because there's not the quintessential, get it? Quintessential.
no, that's good.
Gratuitous blood and violence. Not that there isn't some violence and blood, but not as much as, say, Django or Reservoir Dogs, you know, that just painfully disgusting stuff to watch. Yep. That, like, but if you were to take and break down his framing and his shots and how he, you know, I mean, he's so brilliant at dialogue. I mean, that's one of my favorite things about watching Quentin Tarantino films is his dialogue that he writes. And True Romance, he wrote that film, one of my favorite films of all time. And so just sitting there for 2 hours and 40 minutes and just watching a filmmaker do what he does best is absolutely brilliant for that. I know that there's some people that are let down and just, you're not getting a payoff every 5 minutes. You're getting these long scenes that, you know, that you're hanging on. Like if you watched, what was it? The Hateful Eight. I mean, I thought that ride to the cabin was never going to end. I was like, Jesus, how do you, but you know, and if I were to do that, if I were to make a movie like that, I doubt that people would be as impressed, but the dialogue and everything that goes along with that, it's absolutely brilliant. The shots, the acting, Leonardo DiCaprio, and I love Brad Pitt, and it's so good to see him in a starring role again, where he's got a lot of stuff to do. It was great. And you know, the story is somewhat based on the Manson family murders,
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. All right.
Yeah. So there's that element in there, but the way he does it is so brilliant. And so I really did like the film. It's not one of those ones that I can watch over and over again. I really like Inglourious Basterds. I think that's one of my all-time favorite of his. The whole beginning part of that film could be its own short movie, short film, in my opinion. But it was good. And I definitely recommend, if you are an aspiring filmmaker and you want to know how to frame stuff and light, it's absolutely brilliant. I loved it.
Nice. Nice. Well, I look forward to checking it out. Worth seeing on the big screen for sure. Tarantino movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And, you know, his use of music is brilliant. Yeah. You know, if you want to be a filmmaker, you gotta love Quentin Tarantino. Maybe you don't got to love him for who he is and you know, how he has treated people in the past. But, man, he's a good filmmaker. And I guess he's written a Star Trek film, a script, really? That is. And they're talking about doing a rated R version of Star Trek. And no, it's way pretty darn close to getting greenlit. And it might be his 10th, really? Film.
Oh, he might direct it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. God, that'd be so, what a step out.
Huh, right? Cool. Exactly. Everybody that loves Star Wars would have to like drop, you know, burn their lightsabers and become Trekkie fans.
I think it's worth pointing out, you know, you've said a couple times just now about watching this as an aspiring filmmaker, being able to see and learn from this. And I think that's so worth pointing out. Is such a valid thing to say that if you are an aspiring filmmaker, even not like, oh, I want to make feature films, but I just want to make great YouTube videos, then watching movies like this and paying attention to the framing, the painting, the pacing, the lighting, the dialogue, the music that goes along with it, it's huge. You can learn so much from these.
He's a master at moving the camera. And there's one scene in particular where they're in a, because, you know, the story, Leonardo DiCaprio, he's playing an actor that's kind of somewhat washed up and he's trying to get some roles, and he forgets his lines because he's hungover, and they do this great track around this table. He messes up his line, and then the camera goes back to one and they start the scene over, and they go, and it's like, God, it is so brilliant. And just you're watching a stationary lockdown shot, and then all of a sudden it moves into this something that is just absolutely brilliant. And so if you want to learn how to move the camera, that Watch Tarantino. He knows how to do it.
Okay. That's great advice. Now I want to go see it now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But before I can go see it, we need to take a break. So
yes, we do.
Our sponsor, who is actually just the show itself right now, but depending on when you're listening to this, it might actually be another sponsor. It might actually be,
who knows,
a real sponsor. But let's just take a break so they can get a word in edgewise.
Right. Sounds good.
Well, hopefully that ad read was compelling and interesting to you, my dear listener.
Indeed. Yeah.
Indeed.
And go buy or subscribe or do whatever they tell you to do in that ad.
Yes, do as you're told.
Yeah, that's right.
Buy their product. I wanted to talk very briefly about, I am so excited today. Something is showing up in my studio that I have not been this excited for in a long time. And I'm sorry to tell you, Sean, this is not something that I can loan you. This is not something you can borrow. It's shelves.
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 Good.
You've been in my studio. Yeah. You know how much of a disaster this place can be. I have so much stuff in here and not really good places to put a lot of it. So it ends up in a pile on a table or on the floor or in multiple. Anyway, I was visiting one of my clients recently and they have this room that is an entire wall. It has to be 50 foot long wall of shelves, cubed shelves. And I was like, oh. This is great. I took a picture of it. I need to figure out where this plays into my life. And then I walked back into my studio. I looked at one of my big walls and thought, that's it. A big wall of cube shelves. So they're arriving today. It is going to be 48 cubes. They're like your standard, I forget, 13 inch by 13 inch, I think, cubes. And I'll be able to put lenses and bodies and just like all my stuff. And it'll be nice.
Oh my gosh.
Organized and pretty. And
nice. Are you gonna backlight it so you can actually kind of use it as part of the backdrop, perhaps?
It is going to be set up so that it can be a set. I thought about putting it, you know, where my, for anybody who's watched the YouTube show, you know where I do my regular show. Behind me is my open studio space, and you see a white rolling backdrop and a gray backdrop and a black backdrop. And these are all either rolling roll downs or curtains or whatever, they're suspended. Mm-hmm. I thought about putting it against the white, where the white backdrop is, because I could roll that up and put it there, and then it would be a bit of a prop for the main show. But I realized the fallacy of that is when I'm shooting in there, obviously I'd have to roll down the white seamless, which would then block access to the gear. And this is not cold storage. This is, you know, active. I need to get into a storage. That I realized didn't work. So it's going to be next to that, kind of in the middle of the studio against the big wall. And yes, though, I will be setting it up in a way where I can use that as a backdrop.
Yeah. Yeah. A portion of it can be used, but then you can still use the backdrop there. So cool.
Right.
All right.
Right.
Now, so, are there any cabinets on these? Are they lockable? Are they wide open?
No, these are all, it's this kind of very standard size, 13, I believe it's 13 inch square shelves. And they make baskets and they make like inserts to make them into double shelves. And they make little wine bottle racks and they make hanging kind of canvas things for hanging magazines. Like, there's all different kinds of accessories for it,
very cool.
Which I may end up getting some at some point. But for the most part, it's just having the shelves that I need.
Right.
Yeah. And being able to stack the stuff. And there's 48 of them. There's actually four by three grids that are coming that are going to get side by side and stacked and attached to each other and then attached to the wall. So it's rock solid. And actually, I should point out too where I got these. It's kind of interesting. I went through, the first thought was IKEA, right? Because I have shelves like this from IKEA, smaller ones that I've had for, I don't know, 15 years or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, IKEA makes good stuff. It's cool, right? It's flat pack, easy, blah, blah, blah. But we don't have one nearby here, as you know. The nearest one is Portland. And they do deliver, but shipping cost is like $200 on these.
Oh, God.
That's just ridiculous, right? So I look on Amazon and I find a bunch of stuff on Amazon that looks pretty good, but I start reading the reviews and they're basically rubbish. And in one of the reviews, someone wrote, these, even though they look like it, these are nowhere near as good as the IKEA, whatever they're called, some Swedish name, or the Better Homes and Garden cube shelves sold at Walmart. And I go, oh,
Walmart.
Interesting. Right. I know Walmart, but it's a Better Homes and Garden brand. So I look it up and sure enough, they've got them on there. And I got to say, the walmart.com website is kind of crappy when it comes to finding these things, because there are many, many options. And it actually required multiple emails with tech support to find the exact product, which I was never able to find on my own, but is available. And it's a 4x3 grid that, like I said, I got four of them, so I'm stacking them up.
Okay.
It's going to be huge.
Awesome. Awesome. Fantastic. So I'll be able to go shopping and actually be able to find what I'm looking for at your studio.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. When you come into the store, you'll be able to see all the stuff there.
Right. And you can just have a little checkout right when I exit the door to go beep, just like the Amazon, the store.
The self shopping store.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Exactly.
Totally.
Exactly. It's so funny, but I'm genuinely, like, literally excited about this. And I said something again over the weekend. My wife's like, yeah, I know you're excited. Your shelves are coming. Shut up.
Sorry, now, are they coming pre-assembled, or is that going to be a whole another live video?
No, it's a flat pack, I'm sure. I don't actually know, but I'm sure they're flat packed. So yeah. FedEx Home Ground or whatever it's called delivery is showing up with them at some point today. At least that's what the app says. So
nice.
Hopefully that's right and I can get started on it right away.
Now, some of my deliveries that I've got from UPS recently, not from FedEx, but UPS, I've been able to pinpoint, actually, like, see where the truck is, what road they're on, and... You know,
that,
like,
is so cool.
And, well, again, I'm pretty far away. So I'm kind of like, definitely later in the afternoon, I can finally get my stuff from UPS because I'm so far away from. But it's cool to see that they're working up, you know, Highway 99 up to my place. Ooh, they're a mile away. You know,
Yeah.
So that's cool. But does FedEx do anything like that? Do they?
I don't think so, because I've seen that as well on UPS. I don't believe I've seen that on FedEx. I'm looking at the app right now. I don't see anything about it.
I mean, that's
I will say that I've used that for UPS in a major city once when I was getting a delivery, and it's like, oh, it's a block away. Great. Yeah. Well, that block was still an hour and a half.
Oh, man. Well, it's kind of like Uber, right? You can see the Uber, you know, coming down. Oh, they took a left. Oh, no, they're going the wrong way. They got to come back. You know, it's interesting to watch. What a time we live in where we can, you know, monitor things like that. It's crazy.
Seriously.
Yeah.
And we should talk a little bit of tech. I wanted to mention the Vlog update, the Filmmakers update that has now been released for the S1. So PSA for anybody out there who owns a Lumix S1, the update is now available. It is free until the end of August. If you already own an S1 or you buy an S1 before the end of August, you get this for free. After that, it's $200. If you bought an S1 before that and you don't claim it before the end of August, you might lose your opportunity to get it. So even if you don't think you need it, just get it.
Just get it.
And you actually, if you've already installed the 1.2 update, you have already installed the software. The Vlog paid upgrade itself, or paid after August 31st, is just a code. And then a process for basically unlocking the features inside of your camera. But yeah, you're basically, reach out to your retail store. If you have not already heard from your store, reach out to them. B&H was reaching out to everybody who bought one. Adorama is reaching out to everybody. Amazon even is supposed to be reaching out to everybody. And your retailer should have reached out to you. But if you haven't heard from them, then call them and say, hey, I bought an S1 from you. I want my code. And that is that. It's actually pretty impressive. Full Vlog, 12-bit. It's awesome. I've been playing with it a little bit.
Yeah, you get all those fun cameras. Now, what do you think the ratio of people purchasing that camera? Because it is a little bit more than getting into a GH5 and GH5S, right?
Sure.
And people that are, you know, down with Micro Four Thirds, are they missing out on this full frame, or are they going, man, I wish I would have got that?
Or sure, I mean, it's just a different camera. I think that people who bought a Micro Four Thirds, when they bought their Micro Four Thirds, it's not like full frame mirrorless wasn't available. They could have bought full frame mirrorless from Sony, Canon and Nikon came much later. Who else had full frame mirrorless back in the day? No, maybe it's just Sony. I don't really follow them. Anyway, so they certainly could have. I don't think anybody who bought Micro Four Thirds bought it wishing that they were able to buy a full frame mirrorless camera, but because felt like they had to buy Micro Four Thirds. So people who bought Micro Four Thirds bought it because they wanted the smaller sensor, lighter weight cameras, less expensive cameras. Right. So this is now just giving people an option who do want full frame to do it within the Panasonic family. And of course with the Leica lenses and all the other lovely things that it comes with. But yeah, I don't think anybody who bought Micro Four Thirds did it wishing they could have bought full frame.
Right. Yeah, because I got out of a GH5 and I'm still, you know, the Black Magic's of Micro Four Thirds and I'm happy. Right. So right. Yeah.
So, yeah, and it's a unique camera. It's awesome. It's big, it's heavy. Compared to a G9 or GH5, it is significantly larger, heavier, more expensive. But obviously it does things that those cameras don't do, and having the larger sensor certainly has its advantages. So sure. I know my message of Micro Four Thirds versus full frame doesn't change, hasn't changed from what I've been talking forever. Right. Obviously now as a Lumix ambassador, we now have full frame to support as well, which is great for those who want that. They can do it within the Panasonic family.
Yeah.
And they're impressive as hell for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I was checking out the revolution of drones, and we've talked drones a couple times here before, but there is, I was just watching this video called The Cinematic Drone Revolution is Here, DJI versus FPV. So if you're
person view?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which I had no idea what that meant. I'm like, oh, FPV sounds good. It's another brand maker. but it's the goggles that you can wear to be able to see exactly what the camera sees on your drone. And what people are doing is they're making their own drones. There's a bunch of parts out of China you can assemble, and you can make these drones for, you know, I don't know how much less expensive it is to create your own and stuff. I don't know how to do that. Like a soldering iron, I burned myself one time and I'm done. So I'm good for that. But this video shows somebody, you know, setting up their Phantom 4, getting the iPad or your phone set up the screen, and then you're looking down at this thing and you can kind of see, but the screen's not so bright and whatever, but just watching what you can do with the first person view in the forest. They do several different things. They go through the forest, they go in the field, and it's just the speed that at which you can do stuff and control and do actual flips and the turns that you can create with this. It's phenomenal. So I'm going to link this video in the bottom. And this just came out in June 18th where, you know, it says DJI versus FPV. Well, DJI just came out with their own FPV goggles.
Well, they've had them out for a while, haven't they?
Well, they have, but these are specifically for the racing style, the small handcrafted drones. So if you have made your own drone, you can use this DJI, and you can actually, it gives you a little camera assembly that you can mount. Some people are mounting GoPros on their homemade drones, but this actually gives you the opportunity to have something that directly connects. And with these goggles, you can connect up to 8 drones together. So if you've seen any kind of aerobatics that they've done in simultaneously, they did a couple of couple of Olympic opening ceremonies. They did some crazy stuff like that. So that's kind of becoming a
so
thing.
So you're controlling multiple drones. I mean, I guess you're controlling one and the others are just mirroring it or something.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Wild.
So pretty darn cool.
Is your view like a fly's eyes? You look in your goggles and you see the view of 180 cameras at once?
Right. That would be interesting. Probably make you throw up. But, you know, Fat Shark has kind of had the corner on the market.
Okay.
As far as their goggles, they're the kind of the go-to aftermarket, and they jive with a bunch of the different parts that you can get from China to make your own drone. There's a couple other Sky Zone, Spectrum Focal, but the fact that DJI is they're really trying to go after so many different markets and take over. And they're pretty darn affordable. As far as like, it's $700 for Fat Shark. These are $530 okay. bucks to get in just the goggles. There's a couple of other different versions you can buy that comes with a controller for just under $1,000. So pretty amazing. I've been talking about getting my drone license, still haven't got it as of the recording of this show. But this is something that once I watch this video and see what you can do with the first person view, it's phenomenal. I mean, it makes me go, yeah, that's what I want to do.
I want to
get better
to be.
At that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I don't fly all that much. I should fly more, but you know, there's a lot of things I should do more of. And it is hard to control, right? You're looking, you're kind of disjointed. And what I've found is one of the hardest things is keeping track of orientation when I'm not flying just away from me. I'm flying parallel or I'm flying back towards myself. And you look down at your screen and you of course see what the drone sees, but then you look up at it. And in your brain, left just became right, but it doesn't. Right. And it's like, oh, yeah. And I have, because I don't do it often enough. Obviously, you do this all the time. It's not a problem, but I just don't do it often enough. So, yeah, I run into trouble.
Yeah. 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 So then you don't have the big screen on your controller. You're looking, you know, ergonomically, you're looking up instead of, you know, hunched over.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, once you see this video, it's pretty phenomenal. And this is just one of many out there that people can just do some crazy stuff.
Nice.
So I really see this as being the next version of what we can do with a drone that, you know, I mean, just the speeds, it's phenomenal. So fun to watch.
Cool. Well, I can't wait to watch the video.
Yeah. Indeed.
Excellent. Excellent. Any other fun projects going on this week? Or you're still working on the stuff for the school?
Yep. Just wrapping up a couple of those things and trying to get some wineries. Right now is a beautiful time to get out there and shoot some wineries, maybe do some time lapse as everything is so beautiful and green.
It is beautiful out there right now, isn't it? Had a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Was up at the lake again. So love it.
Very nice.
Alrighty. Well, I guess that's it. I guess it's a bit of a briefer, less newsworthy show today, but it was fun to chat about all the things that we did chat about.
Sure. Indeed.
We don't have any listener call-ins, so I just want to remind our listeners that you can leave us a message, ask a question, just say hello, whatever it is. We'd love to hear from you. It's a super, super cool thing to do. Just go to anchor.fm/photojoseph, and from there, you will see a send a message, record a message, something link. And just even just using your phone or whatever mic you've got on your computer, whatever, it doesn't matter. You can just record a little voice message to us. Again, ask a question, just say hello. We'd love to hear from you, whatever it is. And we can insert that directly into the show. It's kind of a cool anchor feature.
Fun. Yeah. I like it.
I like it too. I'd like it more if people used it more.
We've
only had one come in, but hey, only a few people are listening. We're getting there. We're on iTunes now. It's happening.
Indeed. Fun. Indeed. All right. Good talking to you, Photo Joseph.
Take care, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
See ya.